A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. Hey, it's Dan. Before we get into this week's Reheat with comedian Jim Gaffigan, we have a bunch of exciting upcoming events I want to mention real quick. First off, the West Coast swing of Sporkful Live, Anything's Possible, my book tour of live podcast tapings, is starting in just a couple days. This Sunday, April 28th, I'll be in San Francisco. On the 30th in Seattle, although the Seattle show is sold out. And then Thursday, May 2nd in Los Angeles. All these shows have tons of cool guests and special appearances and people I'll be in conversation with. And some of them even have free food samples. All that info is at sporkful.com/events. And then new book events have just been added. I'm teaming up with the culinary whiz kids at Cafe Mars in Brooklyn. They call themselves an unusual Italian restaurant. They love to do weird stuff with Italian food. They're going to take Anything's Possible, my cookbook, and let it inspire a whole menu of dishes. If you go to our events page, you can get not only a link to the tickets, but also a link to the full menu to see what will be served. This is one night only at Cafe Mars, Thursday, May 9th in Brooklyn. And then the following Thursday, May 16th, I'm doing a virtual cooking class with Milk Street Online Cooking School. So everyone's invited. For details on all of our live shows and various events, including coupon codes for that virtual event, go to sporkful.com/events. All right. This week's Reheat is my conversation with comedian Jim Gaffigan. Now, we first aired this episode way back in 2015. Jim was already a big deal back then, but he has continued to be one of America's top comics. A few months back, the New York Times named his 2023 special, Dark Pale, the best of the year. They wrote, each year he gets a little better, figuring out new challenges that fit his everyman aesthetic. So check out this conversation with him. And also, if you have an episode you'd like us to reheat, send me a message at hello@sporkful.com. Thanks, and on to our episode with Jim Gaffigan. Google comic Jim Gaffigan, Hot Pockets comes up. Google Hot Pockets, and Jim Gaffigan comes up. He's sort of famous for his Hot Pockets routine.
Tonight's specials, we have a sea bass, which is broiled, and we have a Hot Pocket, which is cooked in a dirty microwave. And that comes with a side of Pepto. Is your Hot Pocket cold in the middle? It's frozen. But it can be served boiling lava hot. Will it burn my mouth? It'll destroy your mouth. Everything will taste like rubber for a month. All of the Hot Pocket.
Hot Pocket!
It's a classic bit, but he does so much more great stuff on food. He even wrote a book called Food, A Love Story. And when Jim eats, he's all about pleasure. He doesn't really go for kale.
That stuff tastes like bug spray. I was looking at a can of bug spray. It said, made with real kale. It's inedible. All you have to do is freeze dry it, cover in cayenne peppers, put in a shake, and bury it in the ground. Kale is so good for you.
They could find out kale cures cancer, and I would still be like, I'm just going to do the chemo, all right? I've tried the kale.
Today on The Sporkful, I sit down with comic Jim Gaffigan. It'll be a meeting of food-obsessed minds. We'll discuss what he eats before going on stage, his buffet strategy, and dinner with his five kids. Turns out it involves a lot of lying to them. Stick around. From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. When Jim Gaffigan came in to chat, well, I had a cold, so you'll hear that. But more importantly, he got comfortable pretty quick.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
I feel like I'm home.
That's right. And right? This is a safe place.
This is a safe place for me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not a weirdo who's overly obsessed. Right. I'm normal folk here.
That's exactly right. Right.
Food's a big part of Jim's TV show, The Jim Gaffigan Show, which just started its second season. Another big part of the show, Jim's kids. Like I said, he's got five of them. They now range in age from 3 to 12. And he talks about them a lot in his stand-up.
Strangers, for some reason, think I'm unaware that it's a lot of kids.
Five kids, that's a lot of kids.
Oh, you think so? Thanks for the heads up. Do you mind if I stab you in the head? The best is when I'm alone with my five kids and inevitably struggling, and some stranger will come up to me and go, looks like you got your hands full. Why would you say that? It's like going up to someone in a wheelchair. Looks like you don't do a lot of dancing. Looks like you got your hands full. Yeah, I could still punch you. But it is a lot of kids, you know?
Like, my kids love lox. They love smoked salmon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like, that's, like, good lox is expensive. Yeah. I give some of them, and they each get a lot of lox, and they leave the table, and then I make daddy's bagel with lox, and I sit down, and I'm about to take a bite into my big bagel with cream cheese and lox.
Yes.
And one of them comes wandering back into the kitchen, and they're like, daddy, what are you eating?
Oh, yeah, the deception, the lies you tell your children. I've told, have you ever told your children something spicy when it's not spicy?
Yeah.
You're like, you wouldn't like this. It's spicy.
Right.
I'm an adult lying to a three-year-old.
But like, do you ever get angry? Do you like, sometimes I'm like, no, you had your lox. This is daddy's lox. Then I feel bad, like I'm being selfish and I should give it to them.
Yeah, I don't, there's such a swarm mentality that I don't really fight it. So like, if I get a burger and fries from the restaurant downstairs, I know if any kid's awake, they're going to eat all the fries. And so I, you know, I kind of sit there and I go, you know, this is an opportunity for me to be generous. But I have lied.
Right.
I've most definitely lied. I've eaten something, you know, outside of my apartment knowing that I can't bring it in. You know what I
totally.
Mean? I've eaten a bagel outside, so I didn't have to share it.
Do you ever like eat in hiding? Like, have you ever eaten something like, in the bathroom? Because you don't want your kids to see, you don't have to share
yeah.
with them?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. We wait until they're in bed before we, you know, because there's like these Thai spring dumplings that it's like they think they're it's kids' food. And it's like, no, I'll wait till they're in bed before I bring them out.
You got five kids.
Yes.
Your wife, Jeannie, works with you.
Yes.
And largely raises your kids.
Yes.
Talk to me, describe dinner, family dinner at the Gaffigan house.
You know, it's a constant battle to stop them from chewing with their mouth open or using their hands or, you know, like a two-year-old. You're lucky if they make it the food into their mouth.
Right.
So it's pretty chaotic. Occasionally, we will have guests that will just kind of watch in amazement because if you can just have a kid sitting upright through a meal, that's amazing. And there's just different levels of improper consumption occurring.
Right. So how much time in a given meal are all seven of you sitting at the table and eating simultaneously? Like how many seconds?
I would say roughly 30 seconds. Right? There's always somebody that wants to leave or somebody we're waiting for someone to get to the table
right.
or
someone needs more water or more yeah. juice or whatever.
Or there's been a spill, right?
Right?
You know, there's
yeah.
a, you know, the 3 and 4 year old, that's when there's just always a spill. Like, they're knocking over their cup or other people's cups, you know.
That's the issue we have. I have a 2-year-old and a yeah. 4.5-year-old.
Yes.
And my wife and I can't have beverages at the table because the 2-year-old just wants to grab our glass and drink from it, yes. which means that, like, she then, not only is she likely to spill it everywhere and drop the glass, which is actually a glass,
yes.
on the ground, but then she's going to get her backwash all in our water.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. There's also the issue of a knife.
Right.
So there's the task of, because there's a certain age where you want to instruct them on how to cut their own food. But around that same period, you're giving essentially a sociopath a knife. Like someone that doesn't understand you shouldn't jab a sibling with a knife. And it could be a very dull knife, but it's still a knife.
Right.
Also, the pizza cutter that you see in a pizzeria, very dangerous. Have you ever cut your finger on one
yeah,
of those?
And
it's insane,
yeah.
right? And pizza, of course, is the national food of children, right? You get, it wasn't pizza. It eventually gets ruined for parents. Like it used to.
Is that happening to you?
Absolutely. Pizza was this, you know, I have, you know, many views on pizza. I mean, first of all, I love Chicago deep dish, but pizza in general used to be a celebratory thing. It used to be something you'd eat in college or something you'd have fun late at night. And kids, you know, it's such an important part of a kid's birthday party because it is
the food that every kid will eat, and they can eat it with their hands, that you have it way too often.
You know, one thing I discovered, the one benefit of being at the kids' parties and cutting up so many slices of pizza into those tiny, like, 1 centimeter squared little cubes you should do for a two-year-old?
Yes.
Is that those little cubes of pizza are a great pizza topping.
Oh, yeah. No, that's... I've seen that on
Twitter.
You
can sprinkle them on top of a slice of pizza, and it adds texture.
It adds texture, but there's also... Then it's almost like a stale piece of pizza.
Is Jeannie, your wife, worried about your eating habits influencing your kids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she should.
Do you ever, like, eat an unhealthy food off of their plates so that they eat less of it?
No, but I've pretended to enjoy healthy eating in front of my kids many times. But, you know, having kids has made me a healthier eater. Like, I enjoy broccoli now, or, you know, edamame. Like, I give myself credit for eating edamame. I'm like, look at me, Mr. Healthy, eating a head edamame.
You're so virtuous.
But, So, yeah, no, I mean, it's a very positive influence. But then again, if I didn't have five kids, I might be, I'd have more free time to maybe exercise. I used to be thin. I'm like in eating Gilbert Grape, like that mom that was like, I didn't always look like that. That's how I feel. And that's, you know, I didn't always eat like this.
I
blame my children.
Right.
I blame the light of my life.
Coming up, much more with Jim Gaffigan. He'll explain why he's the Jean-Claude Van Damme of eating on television. Stick around.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
Mm-mm, it's very good.
In the Pashman household, we're already big fans of Tillamook shredded cheese. In fact, I used it in developing many recipes in my cookbook. And now I'm getting into their ice cream. Tillamook ice cream is made with more cream, so you get smooth and dreamy scoops each time. You may not realize it, but this is why a lot of the store-bought ice cream doesn't taste the same as what you get in, like, in an ice cream parlor. But with Tillamook, they don't skimp on the cream. These people know dairy, okay? Tillamook makes a great rich vanilla ice cream with real crushed vanilla bean seeds. They have an Oregon strawberry, sweet strawberry ice cream with ripe Oregon strawberry pieces. The one that I really love is the mudslide flavor, smooth chocolate ice cream with a ribbon of rich fudge and chocolatey chips. You want to move the spoon around to get fudgy and chocolatey chips and the ice cream all in the same bite each time, and it's just so, so nice. And like I said, I just trust Tillamook when it comes to dairy. They make over 200 different dairy products, and the brand is farmer-owned and led by dairy experts. Find Tillamook ice cream near you at Tillamook.com. That's TILLAMOOK.com. Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels, and you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third-generation, family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks. Welcome back to another Sporkful Reheat. I'm Dan Pashman. Hey, check out my Instagram when you get a chance. I share what I'm up to, what I'm eating, all of my hot takes that don't always make the cut here on the Sporkful, although I don't know why anybody would want to cut out my rants about the best way to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but the point is that that stuff is on my Instagram. Also, sometimes I'm like debating, what should we do for this episode? And I'll put up a poll, so it gives you a chance to actually have input into the show. So you can do it right now while you're listening. Follow me on Instagram at TheSporkful. Again, that's at TheSporkful. Thanks. All right, back to this week's reheat.
Growing up, my dad would, you know, he grew up in Depression era and he was like, steak, we're having steak. Like it was like Abe Lincoln's coming over for dinner. But steak, I get it. It's an old guy thing where I'm like, now I get it. Like I want to sit in a dark room and eat meat and have a salad covered in blue cheese. I don't know what happened. It's part of the evolution of the man, the American male, I think.
Tell me, I mean, oh, you're right about your dad's steaks in your book. Yeah. Tell me more about your dad's steaks.
Steak was a very important thing. And my dad would burn the steaks. He would buy steaks and he would go back on the back porch in Indiana in the dark drinking scotch and there would be ashes all over the steak. Like I remember thinking, well, there's usually ashes, a flavor of ashes in most steak that I eat. And so we would eat steak and then, but you know, so that was my dad's association with steak. It was associated with him. He would eat steak like after my mother died, I would go back and visit him and he would be eating steak every night. Every night. And he would present it like he's never had it before. Like, you want a steak? I'm like, we had it last night.
How do you like your steak now?
I like it medium rare.
Okay. So you don't love the well done. That's good. Medium
no,
rare is better.
I don't. Yeah. And you know, I'm very white trash. So it's like but it is weird when people are like, I like it well done. You're like, well, what's the point?
Right.
But I mean, look, I like fast food burgers, so I'm not that high end.
But those are juicy, at least.
Yeah, and they're covered with delicious chemicals.
Right, exactly. Right? So they got
I
something
prefer the on. Wendy's chemicals to the Burger King chemicals.
Well, that's good. It's nice that you have such a refined palate that you can identify the difference. You wrote a book called Dad is Fat.
Yes.
In Food, a Love Story, you cite your weight as evidence that you have the expertise mm-hmm. needed to mm-hmm. write a book about food.
This is true.
I'm curious, like, it's become now like a part of your persona, a part of your act. Yes. Do you almost like feel obligated to maintain a certain weight? Like, is eating like training for you? Like, if you suddenly decided for whatever reason you were going to lose 25 pounds, like, would you feel like you were alienating your fans in some way?
Or being dishonest? Well, you know, the amazing thing is, like, when I wrote Dad, It's Fat, I wasn't that fat. Like, the joke was that my kid was saying I was fat, and I really wasn't. Now I am fat. And by the way, I've always talked about food in this obsessive way, except for the comments from peers and people that have gone to my show. It used to be, wow, you talk about food like an obese person. And now people just say, wow, you talk about food.
Right.
So it's changed a little bit. But there is, I mean, there are plenty of people after shows where they've expressed a little disappointment that I'm not heavier. And, you know, I feel like I'm letting them down.
What do you eat before you go on stage?
That's a great question. Well, it's an important thing. I'm always eating, right? I try to always eat. It's either that or feel emotions. So but the problem is I'm a low-energy Midwesterner and... So, you know, when you get to a theater and you're getting ready to do a show, I will usually have like a ham sandwich. I want cheese, but I can't because I don't want to. I don't want the dairy to kind of. I don't want to get all mucusy or whatever. I hope everyone's eating while they're listening to this. But so I try and keep it relatively light because I am a low energy guy. I mean, I drink coffee and Red Bull before a show, like all these things you're not supposed to do. But any artificial form of energy, I'm not doing amphetamines or anything like that, but is necessary. So I try and keep it very light before the show. Afterwards, I feel like I've worked for an hour. I feel like I deserve a steak.
Your show just debuted on TV Land. It's called The Jim Gaffigan Show. Yes. I've watched several episodes. I love it.
It's a masterpiece.
What was it like, sort of like playing yourself? I mean, like are you? I assume you're playing like a quasi true to life. Tell me about that process.
Well, it's you know, my stand up is kind of an exploration of the id, or like, you know what we kind of want. We all want to sit in bed and eat bacon all day. As that is kind of one of my beliefs. But so I think if my stand-up character is maybe, you know, 20 IQ points dumber than me, then the TV gym is another 20.
So this is dumber IQ than stand-up?
I think dumber.
Okay.
But it's done for comic effect.
Right.
But it's, you know, I do love the fact that food is something that I think my obsession with food is executed very well. There's a couple episodes where we go through and we sit there and we go, all right, that's the Red Velvet one. That's the Chicago Deep
Dish. Totally, totally.
That's the Everything Bagel episode.
Yep.
And they're usually like runners. The whole episode is not about an Everything Bagel, but it's a very important element.
It's a through line.
It's a very important element.
And I wanted to ask you, so you're often eating in the show.
Yes.
And, you know, when you shoot a TV show, you often have to do multiple takes.
Yes.
Like, how many, like, one episode I think of is the fudgesicle episode.
Yes.
How many fudgesicles did you actually have to eat to shoot that episode?
I probably ate maybe 50. But the whole thing is like, look, I do my own stunts. Like, there's a spit bucket there, but I feel like the spit bucket is for amateurs.
You're like the Tom Cruise of eating on television.
Absolutely. Or Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Because that's what shellfish are. They're just creepy, crawly, giant insects on the bottom of the ocean. You know, fish are swimming around like, we got to get an exterminator up in this piece. They have a shell like a bug. They have spindly legs and crawl around like a bug. They have antennae like a monster. They're probably monsters. Like, if you went home and you saw a chicken in your house, you'd be like, what the hell is a chicken doing in my house? But if you saw a lobster, you'd be like, we're moving. Because there's not a nickel's worth of difference between a lobster and a giant scorpion. Now, I understand everyone loves lobster. I love lobster. Hey, I like butter too, okay? How can I eat 3 sticks of butter? Well, I found this giant swimming sea scorpion. Lobster tail. Is that the area near the butt? Mm-hmm. How about those restaurants where you have to pick out your own lobster? You're like, I guess I'll take that one that's really struggling with the rubber bands.
On Facebook, Sporkful listener Anne Marie asks, Jim, what do you do when you get full but you want to keep eating?
It's a great question. This is something I deal with a lot. First of all, I haven't been hungry in close to 35 years. And hunger is not what determines consumption. Flavor does. Forget about it. This is America or Canada. And it's not about being hungry. And I would also say that some of it is it's mind over matter. You can't worry about how your stomach feels. If you're eating Chicago Deep Dish, which I think is a classic gluttonous example, no one has ever needed to eat more than one piece of Chicago Deep Dish. But it takes roughly 3 days to wait for them to make it. So you gotta eat 2 pieces. So you're gonna have to tough through the second piece. And if you're a real man or woman, I'd eat that third piece.
I always get to 2 and I say to myself, that was enough. I'm definitely full. Mm-hmm. I don't need any more. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'll just take one bite of this third slice.
Yep.
And then I eat the whole third slice.
It's unbelievable.
And that's all she
wrote. I'm going on tour. I'm on a 30-city tour. And I look at the map, and I only see what I'm going to eat in those places. I'm spending 2 days in Chicago, and I've already mapped out. I mean, you know, like there's a deep dish pizza, then there's Italian beef, then there's a hot dog or two.
Oof.
And so Chicago, it's I gotta get prepared for it.
Buffet strategy.
Yeah.
This is a topic you discuss in your book.
Yeah.
And I know it's funny you talk about the phrase all you can eat. I did study abroad in London for a while, and it always struck me that there they don't say all you can eat. They say eat as much as you like.
Oh.
Which is an interesting difference.
Right, because I believe all you can eat, it really is all you should eat. Like, there should be, like, a bouncer there saying, all right, you've had enough. And there's a strange pressure when you get there. There's always, with the buffet, there's a strange kind of, like, well, there's a challenge, right? You know, you initially go in there and you think, oh, these guys are going to lose their shirt. And then after about 10 minutes, you're like, these people are trying to hurt people, right? They need to be stopped.
But they also, I mean, they're I've sort of imagined a mythical figure that represents the people who run buffets. I call him the buffet master.
Oh, interesting.
The buffet master is shrouded in mystery. He's usually watching the buffet from a windowless room through closed-circuit TV, and he monitors the stations.
Similar to a casino.
That's right. But in my imagination, he looks like Claw from Inspector Gadget, you know, stroking the cat and all.
Yes.
And the buffet master rigs the buffet. Not unlike a casino rigs.
Because I had the premise that it works just like a casino.
That's right.
The house always wins.
Well, unless you have the buffet equivalent of like counting cards.
Yes, it seems like a great idea. But do you want to get sushi at a place that's also offering donuts? Right? There's something, oh, yeah, they have Italian options and biscuits and gravy.
Right.
I don't know. Like, biscuits and gravy, I'll always go biscuits and gravy. Again, a stomach killer, right? Not good for the buffet.
Yeah.
You do biscuits and gravy, but it's always offered at a buffet.
Right.
And who doesn't love biscuits and gravy? Satan. Satan doesn't love biscuits. But so, like, the strategy for a buffet it's an interesting strategy, right?
So walk me through your approach, because you want to get your money's worth. You also want to eat the foods that you want to eat. I mean, you're not going to just go in there and eat like, you know, 10 pounds of caviar just to say you got your money's worth.
Right.
So how do you do it?
What is my tactic? I will usually try and steer towards the meats, right? There's only so much bacon you can eat, but I find you can eat like $10 or $12 worth of bacon. That'll make a big dent.
Right, right.
But, and then you got to get that omelet station guy working.
Yeah.
So I usually get over easy fried eggs. Again, what do they cost? 20 cents?
Right.
But I made them work for it.
Right, right. Factor in the labor.
The labor. And then I'll always go sausage patties, bacon. You know, occasionally I'll do like a blend, something a little bit more convoluted, you know, but I'm grazing when I go to a buffet. You know, you'll even find me, I present this like it's interesting, you'll even find me at the Mexican station.
How exotic.
What do you do?
Well, I, first tip, which my mother taught me when I was very young, and I hope you'll pass this on to your children.
So many gifts from your mother.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Survey the entire buffet before you take anything.
Oh, yeah. It's just like taking an exam. Look at the front to the beginning.
Right. All right. The whole thing. Then you got to pick your spots. I like to go through one pass through and take small amounts of all the things I want to try. That also reduces waste.
Yes.
And lets me...
Because you care about the environment. Right. Your buffet footprint,
as they call it.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I try a little bit of everything, and then I pick from that array, I'll pick the highlights. Then my second trip up, I'm going in for the kill, and I'm getting large quantities of the things that I like the most.
And what would that be?
It depends on the buffet, but I like you, I'm going to focus on meats.
Meats, right.
Fish, high-value items. You know, some people say, like, oh, I wouldn't get the fish at a buffet because it's been sitting out. Like, if you're worried about the quality of the food at the buffet...
You shouldn't be at the buffet.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, when people are like, oh, I like to start with a salad at an all-you-can-eat buffet so I don't overeat. If you don't want to overeat, you shouldn't be at the buffet.
You've already lost
money.
Right,
right. Like, what are you doing?
The worst is when you take a kid to a buffet... and they get a bowl of cereal.
Right, right.
You're like, how dare you? I also, my game is thrown off because I'm usually dealing with numerous kids.
Right.
And trying to get, we just get plates of food and they don't eat any of it except for the cereal.
That's comic Jim Gaffigan. The Jim Gaffigan Show airs on TV Land Sunday nights at 10, 9 central. Season 2 just premiered. You can also check out Season 1 on demand, and it's on iTunes and Amazon as well. Jim's also performing stand-up all across America this summer. Find his tour dates at jimgaffigan.com. Also, please remember to come and hang out with me and pig out with me at the Laid Back Festival at the Nikon Theater at Jones Beach. There's going to be a ton of amazing music and a ton of amazing food. And also, I'll be there. So let's hang out. To get your tickets, go to Ticketmaster.com and search Laid Back Festival. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sandy and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Shelby Withers from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Brent from Vine Hill, California.
And I'm Kristen from Jamaica, Queens, reminding you to eat more.
Eat better.
And eat more better.
The team that produces The Sporkful today includes me, along with managing producer
Emma Morgenstern
and senior producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Nora Ritchie and Colin Anderson. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.